Welcome to Finding God's Grace with Catholic storyteller, author, and Hall of Fame broadcaster Tony Agnese. Join Tony and his guests as they share experiences of God's extraordinary grace in their lives. Now, here's your host, Tony Agnese.
Hi, this is Tony Agnese, and welcome to this edition of Finding God's Grace. It's great to be back. We've got a great show for you today. We're going to be starting with Sister Teresa Alethea Noble. Sister Teresa is the author of the book, The Prodigal You Love, Inviting Loved Ones Back into the Church. It's published by Pauline Books. You know, everyone has a family member that has left the faith, and Sister Teresa Noble will give you some great ways to get them to think about coming back to the faith. That's in the first segment of the program. Then I'll be featuring one of my podcasts from the past called When My Children Have Lost Their Faith. We'll talk a little bit about that same subject for you. Then we'll be talking with Ross Allen Hill. Ross Allen Hill is the author of the book Broken Pieces, Nothing Wasted. He is the president of Bank 2 in Omaha, Nebraska, one of the top places to work in America. And then we're going to finish things off with my good buddy, Jeff Compton. The show is entitled The Catholic Playlist. It's not a new show. It's been around for 2 years, and it's heard on all of the Annunciation Radio family of stations and will soon be heard, beginning this Sunday, on Living Bread radio stations as well. We'll be talking to my friend Jeff Compton from the CatholicPlaylistShow.com. All of that coming up on this edition of Finding God's Grace. Welcome back to Finding God's Grace. This is Tony Agnese. Sister Teresa Alethea Noble is the author, blogger, and member of the Daughters of St. Paul. Sister Teresa was a former atheist who returned to the church of her upbringing and now works with people to bring their loved ones back to the faith. Her new book, The Prodigal You Love, Inviting Loved Ones Back to the Church, is published by Pauline Books. And Sister, welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you, Tony. It's great to be here.
I think that one of the biggest problems we face today as people in the church, and I'm talking about loyal Catholics who are in the pews every Sunday, some every day, is the fact that we all have a prodigal we love that has kind of stepped away from the faith, yet it doesn't get discussed as much as you think it should be discussed. Would you agree with that? Are we just embarrassed that our children have left the faith, or what is it as parents that causes us not to discuss this?
You know, I'm not sure. Sometimes my sisters bring our books to parishes, and, you know, we do little pulpit, we call them pulpit talks at the end of Mass. And I've done a few where I asked people to raise their hand if they have a loved one who is away from the church. And I tell them this before I tell them anything about my story, and people get these almost scared looks on their faces.
Mm-hmm,
they don't. It's almost like something they don't want to admit. And I say, don't be afraid. You know, raise your hand. Because often I think some people just don't. But because they are embarrassed, and because I think it is a topic that really doesn't get discussed as often as it should in homilies and, you know, as openly, because there are a lot of people really suffering because of loved ones who are away from the church. And once I tell the congregation, you know, I used to be away from the church. I was an atheist, and I understand how it is, and I want to help you invite your loved ones back, then the response after Mass is, you know, a lot of people come to me, and not just to buy the book, but to ask me for my prayers, to ask me, you know, what should I do in this situation? And so people are really hurting.
And many of these people, they've raised their children in the faith. They've been conscientious about teaching them the faith. And sometime after confirmation or about the time they go off to college, a good number of young people, no matter what that upbringing is, no matter how loyal Catholic and Christians that their parents are, they tend to drift away.
Yeah, it's the culture that we're living in is not a culture where it's easy to keep our faith.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about your story. Obviously, when you write a book like this and you begin the book by telling your own personal story, you grew up as a Catholic, as a young woman growing up, tell us what happened.
Yeah, I was raised in a very devout family. My father has a PhD in theology, and he was a professor at a Catholic university. He was actually a convert, and my mom was a cradle Catholic. So they both were, faith was at the center of our family life as I was growing up. And I had a very strong faith as a child. But I was also a doubtful person, naturally skeptical and always asking questions and pushing back. And so there was that aspect of my personality. But then as I entered the teenage years, there were some difficulties with the work that my father did, and I was exposed to, you know, people in the church kind of behaving badly, you know, in a hypocritical way. And I was really turned off by that. And I remember, you know, as a teenager thinking to myself, you know, I want to be a good person, but these people aren't good people. and they've been practicing the Catholic faith. So, you know, maybe I can do this without being Catholic.
We hear that word hypocrite quite a bit. I mean, some of the polls I've read of young people who have left the faith use that very word. It seems like some of the people that I have been associated with are hypocritical. So you felt that way as well, huh?
Yeah. I think, you know, when I speak to young people in college and younger high school, I think authenticity is very, very important to them. And so when they see people of faith not behaving, almost behaving out of a false self rather than an authentic self, I think it's a real turnoff. I don't know why that in particular is so important to young people, but I really think that it is. And for me, it was very important. Truthfulness in the way that we live, you know, it's very important.
So you said maybe I can still lead a good life, but away from some of what you thought was not authentic.
Yeah, and mixed in with my natural skepticism and those thoughts was the problem of suffering, and I had some anger at God about the problem of suffering. Just thinking, my family is suffering. My dad's trying his best to serve the church, and at the same time, you know, bad things keep happening to us. Why is that? Why? So I also started to develop an anger towards God that eventually turned into a disbelief in God.
Mm-hmm. And how old were you when this happened?
I was 14 years old when I told my parents that I'm an atheist. I don't believe in God, and I'm not going to get confirmed. So.
Mm-hmm. And then you went through school and so forth, and obviously had a job and were working. And what was there something, you know, did a bolt of lightning hit you? What began to start that journey back?
You know, in a lot of ways, it was a gradual process, but I did have a moment. I call it my Damascus moment, because I'm a daughter of St. Paul, and I really can relate to St. Paul as he was walking on the road to Damascus, being just struck down, because I did have a moment where, you know, I didn't believe in God one moment, and the next moment I believed in God. So I did have a lightning bolt moment. But leading up to that was a very gradual kind of unfurling of my soul towards God and opening up to God again. And I didn't know it consciously because I didn't believe in God, but I was just becoming open to the point where he could kind of introduce himself to me in my life again. Mm-hmm. And that happened throughout college and after college.
Did this science versus faith argument come into play with you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was a very... I was a materialist atheist. I believed in science. I believed in reason. But I did have this strange belief in miracles. And at one point, a friend of mine was speaking to me, and he said, "So I just want to be clear here. When you say miracles, do you mean something that, you know, science can't explain right now, and eventually it will be able to explain?" And I said, "No, I think there are things that happen that cannot be explained." And he said to me, I don't think that's really compatible with your atheism. And so that kind of started a little bit of a spiritual journey within me to kind of explore, you know, what could be the cause of miracles if it's not something that science could explain.
Was there a person or persons who helped you on that journey back? I'm thinking now of, you know, St. Monica. She prayed for St. Augustine for years, but it was St. Ambrose who kind of intervened and brought Augustine back into the faith. Was there a person or persons that helped you in that journey?
Yeah, I talk about it in my book a little bit. You know, often the people that you would least expect were the ones who guided me back. And I relate in one chapter on humility, I talk about this interaction that I had. I was traveling. I was in Costa Rica. I was living there for a few months. And this was after I had left college and I had worked for a couple years and I went out to travel for a while. And I was in Costa Rica, and I was living in this very rural area. I was living kind of in an enclave of former Peace Corps people and other Westerners. But then around us was all of these just local, normal, poor, but not destitute. You know, they had what they needed. They were happy people, just simple country people. And there was one day when one of them walked up to me, a gentleman named Chapo, and he said to me, "It's such a beautiful day, Teresita. Aren't you grateful to God for this day?" And I looked up at him and I said, I'm a very frank person, so I said, "Well, yes, it is a beautiful day, Chapo, but I don't believe in God, so I don't have anyone to be grateful for, too."
Mm-hmm.
And he was a very simple man, a day laborer, but the look that he gave me back was a look that was very wise and sympathetic and slightly amused. And I remember thinking to myself, how dare he think he knows something that I don't know? And he actually was often in the bar. He was the town drunk, so I thought to myself, what does this man think he knows that I don't know? But that look that he gave me and that almost glimpse into the eyes of God that I saw in his eyes really changed, it really moved my heart. And so it was often interactions like that moved me rather than intellectual arguments or it was often very simple people in very simple ways who moved my heart.
There is, along those lines, you use the word intellectual arguments and so forth. I've had a few of those and as a parent, and I can honestly say those don't work. arguments don't work. You basically end up where you started, and I feel sometimes that I say this as a parent, that sometimes parents are going to be the least possible person out there to bring their own children back, that it's that look from that person that, like you described, that more does it than any argument or anything we as parents can do. So let's dive into that just a little bit. What can a loved one do? What are some of the things? I mean, if you said, here are a few things that a loved one can do to maybe help that prodigal in their life come back, what would they be?
I think you really hit the nail on the head when you said that it's the most difficult kind of evangelization is, you know, to the ones who are closest to us. So parent to child, brother to sister. And I know how difficult that is from personal experience. But the fact that it's difficult doesn't mean that we should not try.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes we give up or we think somebody else has to do this. All I can do is really pray. I hear that a lot from people. All I can do is really pray. But there's more that we can do. It's difficult. It's very difficult. And sometimes I think that's why we don't do it. But there is more. There is more. And I think it's it's a very subtle art, the art of evangelizing our loved ones. It can't be, it's not in your face. It's not, you know, there are moments that we might have with strangers that it's just boom, you know, right then the Holy Spirit is like, you're just delivering a punch for him, you know. It's really effective. But with our loved ones, it has to be much slower. It's a much slower process, a much more subtle process, and we have to be in tune with the Holy Spirit. I think that's a very important thing, is to ask the Holy Spirit for guidance in all of our interactions with our loved ones.